Thank you. My name is Melissa R. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I first want to take a minute and breathe and say a prayer to God because He is the one who has made me do this. And so I'm hoping that He gives me whatever words that might come out that might help somebody else with this. So I believed that this disease has been with me forever since I came about. I grew up in a very dysfunctional home. There were drugs, alcohol, you name it, there was there. My parents had me at a relatively young age and were very immature. And I grew up in a very large family. My grandmother had seven kids, four boys, and all of them were into drugs, alcohol, and gambling. So much so that they actually were part of a drug ring, and they used to sell and things of that nature. And I say that because there was never enough time for me, and I was on my own a lot, and I was forced to be able to grow up very quickly. And when I was 5, my dad drove across country to Arizona, high as a kite, trying to get away from the drug population, and try to get himself clean. And we lived in the deserts of Arizona for a year with nothing, so that way we could kind of hide from the drug gangs. We came back when I was 6, and we lived with my grandmother. My grandmother and my grandfather basically raised me. They were the only ones who actually had any time for me and kind of made sure that I had the bare basics and the connection that I needed. But I say that because it was very dysfunctional and very disruptive childhood. There was always food insecurities. As unfortunately, there was not enough food to go around, and so me and my two younger brothers had to fight for food. And when there was food around, unfortunately, it was horrible. My mother was a terrible cook. She hated cooking, didn't even know what seasoning was. And so when it was there, that was when it was not when it was prevalent, that was there. So that was definitely something that was an issue. I grew up in an era where you were to be seen and not heard. So I was shown off and then sent off to my room to deal with everything. I was also grew up in a home where there was corporal punishment, borderlining abuse. And I believe that there was some sexual abuse. Unfortunately, no one in my family will actually tell me the truth about it, but I remember bits and pieces, and I actually was caught acting it out when I was 9. So, but unfortunately, I don't remember that. So again, there was a lot of dysfunction in the childhood. I remember being forced to eat foods that I absolutely abhorred, and I had to sit at the table and be and eat those until they were gone. And when if I didn't, because I could definitely I'll stand out time wise, my parents, they would leave it for me for breakfast. So it was there. I had to eat it. It didn't matter how long it took. So again, I'm sure my parents did the best that they could at the time, given all their own issues. But yeah, it was definitely a dysfunctional childhood. I grew up a normal size. At least I thought so. And looking back at the pictures, I thought I was a normal size. However, there was a lot of verbal abuse as well. I was always told that I was fat. Thunder thighs was a I was called that a lot. And the family, a very large family, all took turns picking on me because of my weight. So the pictures that I did see when I was a teenager, looking back, I know that I was a normal size. I stayed the same size my entire high school. Again, I was very small, but not in my head. My head, you thought I was the biggest person ever. When I became an adult, I should back up for a second. My mother had two other children, my younger brother, who was 3 years younger than me, who beat the living daylights out of me, and then the youngest brother, who was 10 years younger than me. And when he was born, I was handed him, and I had to raise him. If I wasn't in school, I was raising him. And so I wasn't allowed to do sports and things of that nature because of that. And so when I was 18, I couldn't wait to get out of there. I would have done anything. I would have married anyone. It didn't matter who. And my boyfriend at the time, unfortunately, he last minute said he couldn't marry me. Come to find out, it was because he was transitioning. I'm grateful that he came out and told me. But so yes, I was devastated. I moved in with my grandparents, but again, that was still too close to my parents, and I really wanted out. So I found the first person who paid attention to me, which actually was my husband. And so I married him. I would have done anything. Unfortunately, probably shouldn't have gotten married, as far as that goes, because the first few years, there was infidelity, quite a lot of it. In fact, 2 weeks after I was married, I discovered that there was infidelity, so my entire wedding was kind of crashed. It should have been the honeymoon phase, and instead, it was me dealing with the crushing blow of my marriage failing. Unfortunately, I had a lot of pride and obviously a lot of Z's in me, and I couldn't go back. Couldn't go back to my parents, and I couldn't go back to my grandparents, and I had nobody, so I stayed. And I dealt with that. And how I dealt with that was I pushed it deep down in my gut and I ate and I ate and I ate. And I ballooned up from that normal size that I really was, not in my head, to well over 300 pounds, and continued to eat and grow. That first year, the amount of weight that I put on was just amazing. It was something that I dealt with it. That's how I dealt with it. I numbed with food, and I didn't really know that the disease was there. I just knew that that was how I coped. So I did that, and I stayed in the marriage, and I just dealt with how everything life just kind of became lifey. That being said, then I lived like that for many years. There was a lot of infidelity in between, and in 2011, my husband came down with MS, and I had to decide, did I want to stay or did I want to go? I'd already been with him forever, and I didn't know what else to do, so I stayed. And essentially, his infidelity stopped. Of course, his disease progressed, and so I deal with that. And we can look back now, we've worked it through a lot for that. But there was a lot, and I still had all the weight. And fortunately, I didn't know what to do with it. So I tried every diet, you name on it, every exercise program. And in 2014, again, I was at my heaviest. I couldn't walk up a flight of stairs. I got winded doing anything, and I would eat multiple meals a day, six plus meals, and any food that was brought into the office, I would steal it. I would eat it. It didn't matter. I would make excuses, like when we would have buffets, to continue to go in there and get more food. And so that was what I did. I ate and ate and ate. So my sister-in-law was on a weight loss kick, and so she went to Jazzercise, and she bought me a subscription. So I went, and I lost a lot of weight, and I was like, oh, this is how you do it. No, that's not how you do it. But that's what I thought at the time, because it worked. And I lost the weight, but the disease is always there on your shoulder, and I did not know that it could manifest in other ways. So it did. I manifested in looking at other men and doing things of that nature, because I thought, well, I mean, here I am, I'm looking good. And of course, the issues kept piling on as far as that goes, and I gained the weight back because I stopped doing as much Jazzercise. So then, in 2018, I was back up again because my weight would yo-yo. And in 2018, during Hurricane Michael on October 10th, I found the gift of desperation. And I remember during Hurricane Michael going to a non-real-time meeting through OA and basically begging anyone to be my sponsor. And I know that's not how you're supposed to do it, but at the time, I didn't know what else to do. So I found my sponsor, and she had me work the program. And I was had just enough willingness to be able to do it. But I pushed back as much as I could, because when someone tells me to go left, I go right. And so I did that, but I did the program, I did the steps. And I kept, when I did the steps and I did my step five, I kept back things because I thought, well, this is just silly. I can keep some things back and not tell her some things. And I did. And so I did my step five, and it was still an amazing experience, even though I kept some things back. I really felt that that was a growth piece for me. And I was knee deep in the program. I did non-real time meetings because I couldn't be bothered with anything with Zoom. And I didn't want to meet face to face, and outreach was not something that I would do. So I did non-real time meetings. I actually had service on those. So I had topic days that I would send out my messages and meetings, and I would do everything through that. So when I had time, that's when I did the program. Not exactly how you're supposed to do it, but that's what I did. And I actually was sponsoring. I had up to five people that I sponsored, and all was going well. And I was down to my lowest weight, feeling good. But that disease was still always there, and it was always on my shoulder. And while I had food neutrality, I did not have peace. I had some peace. I had more peace than I'd ever had before, but I didn't even know that I didn't have that true peace until now. And I just spent a lot of time on the program. In 2022, the disease was rearing its ugly head, and it said, "No, you can spend your time doing other things." And so I did. I bolted. I told my sponsor, "Nope, can't do this." Told my sponsees, "Sorry about you," which I, feel bad for. And I my service positions, I just bolted, and I thought, "Okay, I can do this on my own," because I had been at my lowest weight, and I so wish that I had fallen flat on my face and so quickly. I wish I had, because I probably would be back in the program. But unfortunately, because I was exercising and I was running 3+ miles a day and keeping up, I could keep up with the eating and the binges that quickly came about, and thought, okay, well, this is just how life is. This is just how I am. And so I did that. And I lived in the chaos in my head, and worked through burnout of a job. Quit the job thinking that was the problem, and went to another job, and quickly found out that that was a worse situation, and the burnout there was even more. And I worked a gazillion hours to try to hide it, and there was always again food, because offices for some reason like to give food. And so basically, I was back in the disease, and I didn't know what to turn to, and I had gained all the weight back, and I was terrified. And I remember listening to some things, some wording that popped up. Willingness kept popping up in my brain, and I don't know why. I'm assuming that was my higher power that gave it to me. And I started Googling willingness, and I started like checking on YouTube and searching on YouTube for willingness, and the only things that popped up were either religion, or were AA or OA. And I was like, no, I don't want to go back to the program. I just don't want to go back to the program. But I didn't know what to do. And so I started listening to the podcast again, and that brought me back to wanting to connect with my sponsor again. And I did that. And that was in September of 2023, and it was going okay, and my food was going okay, but then there wasn't enough. My sponsor had her own things that she was going through, and well, she did a great job. She did wasn't always there for me, available. I would message her every day, but I may not get a response back for every couple of days, every maybe a week. And we never did phone. I never talked to her on the phone. Rarely a text. It was just mostly by email. And the non-real time meetings did not do it for me. And I didn't know what to do. So I thought, okay, I'll try a face-to-face meeting. And I had the courage. I mustered up the courage to go. And it was one time a week on Thursdays after work. And I drove the extra 30 minutes to go there. And there were two people there, face-to-face, and three online. And it was the most awkward position ever. And I just didn't feel like I connected with them. And I was just really terrified of what I was going to do. And I don't know, I felt a pushing to try Zoom, and I thought, okay. And that was back in, I had gotten absent prior to that, thankfully, in February, but March 1st was actually my first Zoom meeting with this. Well, I was with, I jumped on an OA Footsteps meeting because I was on the WhatsApp group, and I was asked to give my story in a Saturday meeting because the speaker didn't show up, and I just had shown up, and everybody, it was a very small meeting, and everybody knew everybody's story, so they were like asking me, and I did it, and I don't know, something changed. I was like, okay, now I need to find a home group. Well, the Saturday time frame wasn't going to work for me, and so I decided how, what time could I possibly do it so that it would never affect my work, and that I would be able to do it every day if I wanted to. And I found you guys, and I found home, and I'm gonna cry. Oh, so yeah, I have never felt as much connection as I have with you guys. I can come in here every day, and I did on my vacation, and I will tell you, I am an absolute a lover of sleep. Sleeping in as much as possible was always something that I wanted to do. But I chose to give that up. I chose to get up every morning. I get up at silly o'clock. Thank you for that saying, guys. And I come here to this meeting, and I listen to your experience, strength, and hope. I listen to the struggles, and I realize that I'm not alone, that I'm not terminally unique, that a lot of the what I've gone through has been gone through before. And there is hope for recovery 100% with all the trauma. And I find peace. I cannot tell you the peace that I find throughout the day. Now there are not it's there's ups and downs, and not every day is peaceful. But I know that I can go back to it. And I know that I have the tools, and I use the tools. And when I first came in here, I was terrified of outreach. I did not want to call somebody, a complete stranger, and how do you have that conversation with them, and what do you talk about? And so I was terrified to do it. I thought, well, I'll just text a little bit. And one of the group members, she was the first to call me, and when that phone rang, I was terrified. I was like, I don't want to answer that. And I didn't at first. And then I got a nudging to call her back, like literally 2 minutes later. So I did, and I talked to her. I'm like, well, that wasn't so bad. I can do that. And then there was more, and I can't tell you how much outreach I do each day. My day, my life is now around the program. And then I fit life in. Some days that's more than others, and because I've tried to do with work and whatnot, but my focus, my first thing is my higher power and my program, and it has to be that way. And my family does not understand. I still get made fun of. I've abstaining from sweet d dessert things for well over a year, and they still think it's funny. They joke around and will make jokes that are inappropriate to me, will make jokes that are inappropriate to everybody else about everybody else, and I don't care. I have my program, and I can only think it can only get stronger. And I never want to outgrow this program, and I know that there will always be work to be done. Continue. There's not, I don't ever want to have that demon on my shoulder telling me that I can use my time better than this program. And so I really dig in deep. I try to be really present. And so that's my story. And I'm sticking to it. And with that, I will keep coming back. Thank you.